express some of these concerns, develop some of these ideas in the novel, but use the action as a medium for carrying the people along to get them to read it. In other words, make it entertaining for them, but have a serious message there. And so that's how the Turner Diaries began, as an experiment, just to see if I could do that. I didn't predict any particular. I didn't predict really that the J. Edgar Hoover building would be blown up. That was just an incident in the action in the novel. But what I did predict was that alienation would continue to increase, that governmental corruption would continue to increase, that favoritism toward non-whites would continue to increase, that the country would continue becoming racially darker and would lose its European culture, that its civilization would become cruder and more debased. All of these things I could see happening around me back in the 1970s, and I just projected ahead 20 years.
You know, it's amazing. I was born in 1962. Matter of fact, I'll be 40 years old next Friday. And growing up, I was shielded from a lot of the observations that you as an adult were able to make. But I was also in a nice community in northeastern New Jersey with a good school system. There was only one black family in the town I lived in. And schools were good. Teachers were good. Parks and recreation, it was all safe. And so I grew up with a vision of the world that, well, changed dramatically as I became an adult. And I realized, I guess into my mid to late 20s, that people like me, straight white males, were being blamed consistently for all the social ills of the world. And I didn't like that very much because I knew I wasn't doing things to other people to hurt them or to keep them down. And yet I was being, you know, smeared with the rest for whatever wrongs people perceived happened to them. And on my radio program early on shortwave, I discussed a news item that was brought up by Peter Jennings on ABC's World News Tonight. It was a lawsuit that was filed by a guy named Morris Dees from the Southern Poverty Law Center against a group called Aryan Nations. Now, I didn't know about Aryan Nations. I didn't know about National Alliance. I was very ignorant. And I was quite surprised that a caller to that program was a pastor from the Aryan Nations, and he called the show to explain their side of what happened. And I was intrigued by the caller. It was always interesting to get information from the people directly involved, and so I gave the guy maybe 5 or 10 minutes on my radio show. After I got off the air that night, I was deluged with hate mail. The phone calls that were coming into me were unbelievable. They were saying, how dare you let that person on the radio? How dare you give him time? And I thought to myself, well, the guy didn't speak with foul language. The guy didn't advocate crime. What was wrong with him giving his side of the story? And that's when it hit me. White people are not even allowed to speak in defense of themselves anymore. And from that moment on, my outlook and the focus of my program, I think, were changed forever. So what you saw back in the 70s, I didn't see until last year. And it is troubling. It was very troubling. Now, you formed the National Alliance, is that right?
That's correct.
When did you form that?
1974.
I was just a child. Did you form it in response to your observations?
Well, I was trying to communicate with the public, and I started off writing leaflets and taking them to instant print shops, and then distributing them around Washington, D.C., where I was living and working at the time. I graduated to pamphlets and to a tabloid newspaper. But I realized that I couldn't do it all by myself. If I wanted to communicate effectively, I would have to build a multimedia communications infrastructure with a lot more capabilities than I could possibly give it all by myself. I realized I would have to have an organization to recruit the assistance I need, to recruit other people to participate in my work, to recruit people to support the work financially. So that's why I formed the National Alliance.
Now, this was formed in the 70s, and you said prior to that you were distributing leaflets and such around Washington, D.C., where you lived and worked. What were you doing for work?
Well, I left my position as a senior research scientist up in Connecticut for a large aerospace company, and I had some savings, and I just jumped. It was sink or swim. And I slept in the back of my office on a couch. I limited myself to $50 a month for my groceries. I cooked my meals in my office. And I got small donations from people to start with, even. But I needed more. I wanted to expand. I wanted to do more things. I wanted to have a bigger outreach. And that's why I formed the organization, the National Alliance, so that I could grow and do more things.
So when you say you were a research scientist, your title of doctor is what? A doctor of physics?
Doctor of philosophy. I worked in physics.
Okay, good. Now, it seems to me if you've got your doctoral degree, you've got a very logical thought process. People who pursue doctoral degrees, well, at least back when you pursued yours, actually had to perform to get their degree. Am I about right?
Yes, that's certainly true in the physical sciences.
All right. Now, nowadays, you know, people need to feel good to get their degree. So I don't know how good the degrees are today, but the point I'm trying to make is you looked at situations logically and decided upon a course of action logically, and there wasn't emotion really as part of that equation.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, a person makes value judgments. You know, what sort of world do you want to live in? What sort of world do you want your children to live in? Different people get different answers to that question.
Sure. Are you married?
Huh?
Are you married?
Not at the moment.
Oh, so you
have? But I have been.
Have any children? May I ask?
Yes. Yes, I have two sons.
Oh, that's great.
So I don't know. Well, you call that feeling or emotion or what, but you start off by making a decision about what sort of world you want to live in, and then you use your logic to try to change conditions around you to approach more closely that type of world.
You felt that you needed to take the grassroots approach as opposed to like a political lobbying approach. Did you perceive that politics was the problem?
Well, you know, I don't think, at least not for me, it doesn't make sense to try to do something that doesn't match one's nature. And I'm not a politician. To me, what was important was to try to understand the truth and then to explain it in a way that other people could understand it. And I thought that if I got enough people who were perceptive and who had good character and a sense of responsibility to listen to me, then I could eventually reach all of the people.
How would you characterize your results so far?
Well, for a long time, it was very slow. It was very discouraging. For the last couple of years, things have been moving along much, much faster. 10 years ago, I couldn't even have dreamed of buying a record company, for example.
Okay.
It was way beyond me. But 3 years ago, when the opportunity arose to begin using music as another medium for my message, I had the means to do that, and so I bought Resistance Records. And more and more good people are coming and wanting to participate. More and more people are realizing that saving their money to send the kids to Harvard just doesn't make sense anymore. That it's the type of world that their grandchildren are going to inherit. That's what they have to worry about. And so I'm getting a lot of good people. We have a full-time staff of 15 people working here in West Virginia. And we're doing a lot more things than we were doing 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even 2 years ago.
So it's almost been a slingshot type situation where it's dragged and dragged and dragged, and all of a sudden it just shot forward in a major way.
Yes, well, part of it, of course, is what we've done in building this infrastructure for such a long time, so slowly and painfully, and part of it is that the world around us is changing. Mm. And many of the things that I was talking about 10 or 15 years ago, other people are beginning to see for themselves, and they're saying, hey, he's right.
Well, you know, this brings me to another point. Any time that I ever see or hear or read anything about your organization, everything is prefaced with neo-Nazi.
Neo-Nazi.
And that aggravates the heck out of me. What is the purpose of the National Alliance?
Excuse me?
What is the purpose of the National Alliance?
I thought I just explained that a minute ago. Our aim is to be able to communicate with all of the people.
No,
and in order to do that, we have to build this communications infrastructure, which can communicate with people through books and other printed materials, through the radio, through the internet, through music, through videos. Eventually, I'd like to get into television.
Well, then let me preface the question this way, or rephrase the question this way. What is the message of the National Alliance?
The primary message of the National Alliance is to our people, and that's really the only people we're addressing. I'm not trying to rile up the black Muslims. I'm not trying to rile up Jews. But I'm talking to people of European ancestry who have some feeling for who they are, for their civilization, for their heritage. And I'm saying, look, you cannot just continue sitting on your hands and being a spectator. Look at what's happening to the world around you. You have to begin taking a position. You have to begin becoming a participant. And you can only have an effect if you work together with other like-minded people. And so I try to get them to help the National Alliance in one way or another. I try to recruit people to becoming members. I try to get financial support. I try to get people who have the skills, the talents that are needed to actually participate in the work of reaching out to the public.
Now, as I said earlier, they preface any description of your group as neo-Nazi. Aside from an attempt to smear you, is there any connection between the National Alliance and Nazism?
I don't use that term myself. Another word that you see used in virtually every mainstream media article about me is hate.
Yes.
Whatever I publish, it's hate. In fact, I joked on my weekly radio broadcast a couple of weeks ago that I could write a book on bicycle repair, and the New York Times would denounce it as hate literature.
Well, yeah, I am now in that club. I have been featured by the intelligence report of the Southern Poverty Law Center in an article titled "From America with Hate," and I am now being attacked on a website called Tolerance.org as an example of the virulent racist hatred spewing in America. And Doc, I don't hate anybody. I just see that, you know, there are double standards now in society, very clear double standards, that if a white person commits a crime against a minority, that we hear all about it, sometimes for weeks on end in the news media. But if it's the other way around, we don't hear about it. Or if a straight person commits a crime against a gay person, a homosexual, that we hear all about it, well, such as the Matthew Shepard case. But when the situation is reversed, where, you know, two homosexuals rape and murder a 13-year-old boy or a 16-year-old boy, Jesse Dierks. We don't hear about that. And so that double standard bothers me a lot, and that's one of the driving reasons for me being out here, to focus on the news that the media doesn't focus on. Do you see that as part of your effort?
Yes, of course. I think everybody sees that. I don't think everybody thinks about it very much, but everybody sees this double standard, this bias against normal heterosexual white males, for example. This political correctness, this intimidation if you're not politically correct. Sure, everybody sees that. I've taken it a little further than that, and I have said in my programs, and I've explained this, that this is deliberate, that this is a deliberate campaign to demoralize white Americans, in particular white males. And that's the way of breaking down our society, opening it up for exploitation, and taking advantage of us.
Now, what is to be gained by breaking down the nuclear family, by breaking down the spirit of white people, and by crumbling our culture into decadence? What's to be gained, and who gains?
Well, we used to have a much stronger feeling of solidarity, a much stronger feeling of identity, of who we are as a people, a feeling of connection to and responsibility for our civilization and our culture. We used to have a pretty common set of standards and values. And so it was very easy when someone else, some alien, some outsider came along who had different values and standards, who came from a different civilization, he was immediately recognized and he was considered an outsider. And he had a hard time getting inside and beginning to exercise his influence and take advantage of things. So any group of people who throughout history have consistently existed as minorities inside other majority populations and have tried to exploit those populations for their own benefit have developed a certain survival strategy. And of course, this minority I'm talking about is the Jewish minority. They exercise a vastly disproportionate degree of control over our mass media of news and entertainment. That gives them the opportunity to change people's attitudes, to change people's opinions, to change people's values and standards, and they are doing it. And they're doing it in a destructive way.
But how do they benefit?
They benefit by breaking up this sense of identity and solidarity so that they can move in. They are not noticed as strangers anymore. They can take over. Nobody says, hey, you can't control this big city newspaper because you're not one of us. They get rid of that attitude, this feeling of identity and community and solidarity, and then they can move in and by cooperating with each other have a great advantage.
And this results in monetary gain.
This results not only in monetary gain, it's their survival strategy. It's what they've done for thousands of years.
But was their survival ever threatened in the United States?
No, but, you know, I think it's in their genes. It's just what they have always done. One could argue about this. Well, it's a cultural thing, you know. That's their history and so on. But I think it's both cultural and genetic, that is just the way they are, that's the way they behave, because you see this same type of behavior over and over and over again in many different countries throughout history.
And many countries threw them out for it.
That's right. They were run out of virtually every country in Europe, and out of many countries repeatedly, out of Portugal, out of Spain, out of Sweden, out of France, out of Germany, Germany, of course, was not unified, but out of various provinces in Germany over and over again. In Russia, they were allowed to live only in certain areas, and this was for a reason. It wasn't religious prejudice. It was because the people just finally got exasperated with them, and it caused civil disorder and unrest, and so the rulers said, okay, we're not going to put up with this anymore. Get out of our country. We don't ever want to see you again.
Now, here in the United States, as you mentioned earlier, Jewish people control almost every major media outlet in every city and small town in America. As a matter of fact, I read a fascinating article on your organization's website. The article was entitled, Who Rules America? And I was stunned at how many publications, magazines, newspapers, how many TV and radio stations, how many cable channels are all owned by maybe a dozen people, or at least controlled by a dozen people. And in particular, I watched the creation of MTV, and when it was created, it was a rather wholesome thing. If you put on MTV today, you see all sorts of hideous things being promoted to young people. Interracial activities that show white women dancing with blacks and Hispanics as if this is something to be applauded. And it concerns me very much that people are getting this message so that they engage in or feel comfortable engaging in behaviors which I don't feel are normal. I don't think that the races should intermix in that way. Do you agree?
I agree with you completely. MTV is probably the best example you could give of the destructive way in which the mass media are used. MTV is largely responsible for the promotion of this whole degenerate hip-hop rap culture that is infecting young white people. These kids that you see running around with these baggy trousers and backward baseball caps and the safety pins through their lips. That is the result of this MTV brainwashing. And one fellow owns not only MTV, he owns the other music channel, VH1. He owns the whole CBS network. That's Sumner Redstone, born Murray Rothstein. And I cannot believe that the approach that he's taken is so destructive and so degenerate just by accident. I believe that he is pushing things deliberately in a destructive way that tends to break down our values, break down our traditions, break down our society.
And this he does in conjunction, you believe, with other folks who are also Jewish for the purpose of being able to control society as they want it.
I mean, MTV, as I said, is an outstanding example, but the Disney ABC empire under...
Mike Eisner.
Michael Eisner.
I'll tell you what, Doc, we've got to take a commercial break, and it's going to be about a minute and a half, and we'll pick up this conversation when we get back. Is that all right?
That's fine.
Terrific. Folks, you're listening to the Hal Turner Show. I've got Dr. William Pierce as my guest. We'll be back after this.
Modern America, an immigration policy that will make whites a minority by 2050. Once beautiful cities destroyed by irresponsible and uncivilized non-whites. Black-on-white crimes running at $1.4 million annually with no end in sight. And not one white politician has the guts to mention, let alone take on, these problems. If you are a white man or woman who is mad as hell and won't take it anymore, then it's time you took action. The National Alliance is made up of people like you, white folks who have decided to accept responsibility for the future by joining together with other like-minded people to fight the corruption and degeneracy of our society. No other patriotic organization has the leadership, intelligence, and fighting spirit of the National Alliance. For information on how you can help ensure a future for white people, visit the National Alliance at natall.com or natvan.com. Do it today. The enemies of our people never rest.
This ad paid for by the National Alliance pitch for you.
You have reached the 911 emergency service. All operators are busy.
Oh God, please help me.
He's
got a knife.
You have reached the 911 emergency service. All operators are busy. Please stay on the line for the next available emergency operator. You have reached the 911 emergency service. All operators are busy. Please stay on the
line. 911 operator, what's your emergency, please? Hello? 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 Last year in the United States, thousands and thousands of 911 calls went unanswered. And if you call from a cell phone, there's no way to pinpoint where you are. Yet politicians call for more gun control. We have one question. Why do these politicians have armed bodyguards? Can't they just call 911?
Support this advertising. Send checks to Citizens of America. 2118 Wilshire Boulevard, number 447, Santa Monica, California, 90403. Or go to citizensofamerica.org.
And we're back. The Hal Turner Show, live from Metropolitan New York, New York, in the United States of America. On the phone with me is Dr. William Pierce of the National Alliance and Resistance Records, author of The Turner Diaries. And we're talking about some issues affecting folks of Western European descent. Doctor, thanks for hanging on.
Okay.
We were talking about Sumner Redstone, and we had to go to that commercial break, so why don't you just pick it up from there?
Yeah, well, I think we were both making the same point, that most of the mainstream mass media are under the control or even the ownership of Jews. And we talked about CBS, MTV, VH1, the Redstone Empire. Viacom Corporation is his big holding company. The Disney Company, which owns many film production companies in Hollywood. It owns the Miramax Films, which has produced some of the raunchiest and most destructive films I've ever seen. It's run by the Weinstein brothers, Bob and Harvey Weinstein, but Disney, it's a division of Disney, and Michael Eisner controls it. The Time Warner, which was run by Gerald Levin, another Jew, until their merger recently with AOL, and is still, in fact, under the control of the same people, and has the same policies as it had when it was independent. These are the big ones. But you look at the news magazines, for example, Time, Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report. They're all under Jewish management. The biggest and most influential newspapers, from which the smaller newspapers take their lead, the New York Times, the Washington Post, this dominant influence has led the country in certain directions, which are very, very damaging to us as a people, very damaging to our civilization, and I think threaten our future. We wouldn't have changed our immigration policy back in 1965 to let in this huge flood of people from the Third World if it hadn't been for this enormous Jewish influence in the media pushing in that direction. America in 1950 was 90% white, and the black society was really a separate society in this country then. So we had really a white society, a European society, in this country. Today, whites make up only 70% of the U.S. population, mainly because of this change in the immigration laws back in 1965. And furthermore, the society is mixed. We no longer have a white European country, and it's getting worse every year. The U.S. Census Bureau predicts that before the middle of this century, we will no longer have a white majority in this country. And a lot of idiots, white idiots, who have been influenced by people like Sumner Redstone and MTV, cheer at that. They think that's wonderful. White people are terrible. They're awful. They're responsible for all the bad things in the world, and it'll be good when we can get rid of them.
Now,
I don't agree with that.
Nor do I. And I'll tell you, I live just outside of Midtown Manhattan, and I mean just outside, over in New Jersey. I live in an area that used to be predominantly white, Italian, and Irish, and now is overwhelmingly Hispanic. The level of crime and the filth that exists here now is very, very demoralizing. And the various, I'll call them religious activities of some of these people involve the sacrificing of animals. In the area that I live, the condominium area that I live in, there are some undeveloped lots where we will regularly find chickens with heads cut off, goats that have been sacrificed, a pig's head. We found a pig's head a couple of years ago. And I don't like seeing this stuff. And this is exactly the type of thing that these third worlders bring into America. And I don't understand why our fellow white people think that this is good. Someone said to me, and they joked, but it's true. They said, a person's belief that multiculturalism is good is directly proportionate to their distance from it.
Well, I think that's true to a very large extent. But I use the term lemming on my radio broadcast. Most people don't form their own opinions. They look at what the people around them are saying, and they infer what these people are thinking, and they think the same thing themselves. They don't form independent opinions. And so if you control the mass media, particularly the entertainment media, you can make people think that everyone else around them has certain ideas and certain attitudes and certain opinion, and so the perception becomes reality. And you can push people's perceptions, you can push people's attitudes in almost any direction you want. And that is what they have done, where multiculturalism is good and any kind of a monocultural society is bad, it's racist, it's evil.
Now, I am routinely accused of being a white supremacist. And I learned early on from callers to this program that whites can't be white supremacists. It has to be all the people who are literally killing themselves to get to this country that are the white supremacists, because they obviously want to come here because white culture is better. Now, you know, if you say that to a person in the media, that gets left on the editing room floor. Views such as yours and mine are not put out. Do you attribute that to this Jewish ownership and Jewish control?
I attribute virtually all of the major themes being pushed by the mass media to the Jewish ownership and control.
Now, let me ask you this. Why is it that you don't ever seem to rebut this neo-Nazi label and this white supremacist label and this hate label, or at least you're not quoted in anything as rebutting?
Well, I suppose I do sometime, but I don't want to put myself in the position of always being on the defensive, of always responding to what my enemies are saying.
Okay.
So, to a large extent, I just let them say whatever they want, and I try to get my message across. And since I'm not really addressing the great unwashed out there, I'm not really addressing the lemmings, I'm trying to address the perceptive 3 or 4 or 5% of the white population that can listen to what my enemies say, can listen to what I say, and can make up their own minds about who's right.
And you do this with the hope that 3 or 4 or 5% will then lead the rest to form opinions that are accepting of our logic.
Well, yeah, that's a pretty optimistic way of putting it. I hope that at least they will have the courage, after hearing me speak out and saying, you know, saying to themselves, you know, he's right, that they will then talk to their friends about it, that they will gradually begin shifting this whole climate of thought control that we have away from this rigid political correctness that keeps everybody hemmed in these days.
Well, I'll tell you, the political correctness is so virulent that you can, and people often do, lose their jobs for espousing certain views. I lost a job because of this radio show. I was a commercial real estate agent with Coldwell Banker Commercial Real Estate. I had over $6 million in active listings, and they told me that I had a choice. Give up this radio show or give up the job, because the two were incompatible, and they didn't want to have pressure from outside groups saying that Coldwell Banker had a hate-monger real estate agent. And I promptly told them that I was not going to give up my freedom to speak, and I left the job. But a lot of people can't afford to do that. And when your livelihood's at stake, they've really got you, well, they've got you by a part of your body that's uncomfortable to be held by.
Well, that's true, and I had sort of an advantage when I began speaking out. I leaped into this thing with both feet. I didn't try to hold on to another job. But for me, as I said, it was sink or swim. I have to earn enough to support myself by speaking out, or I'm just gonna starve to death. And I was, although it was painful for many years, eventually I was able to succeed at what I was doing. But yeah, it's a unfortunate thing that businessmen have so little courage, so little concern about anything except maybe they will lose a dollar if they don't toe the party line.
And who's the party?
Well, the party line is what's being promoted by the mass media primarily as being politically correct.
You know, it does always come full circle to that, doesn't it? If a company is accused of passing up minorities for promotion, it's the media that brings pressure to bear on them. If politicians are accused of being racist or bigoted or homophobic, it's the media that brings attention to that. So, regardless of the employment, regardless of the industry, it always ends up in the same place. It's the media driving the political correctness.
Well, that's true. And as I said, what's really so disappointing is that there is so little civic courage among our people. A lot of people, I mean, our people are not stupid, basically.
No.
They can see what's going on. And a lot of people have at least as great an understanding of these things as you and I do. But they won't say anything about it. They won't speak out. They are not. They don't have a strong enough sense of responsibility. They don't have enough civic courage to do what they ought to do.
Or they're intimidated.
Well, sure. I mean, there are a lot of things in this life that are intimidating, but you have to use a little courage. I noticed this big hullabaloo last week when these Oval Office tapes were finally released by the National Archives. And in one of these tapes, Billy Graham, the Baptist preacher, and President Richard Nixon were discussing this problem of Jewish media control. And they both agreed that it was a terrible problem. And Billy Graham said, unless we break this stranglehold that they have on the media, this country is going down the drain. And Nixon agreed with him. And yet they wouldn't do anything about it. And when this was brought up to Billy Graham after these tapes were released, he just groveled and apologized and said, no, he doesn't remember saying anything like that and so on. There's just no civic courage, no sense of honor, no sense of responsibility to stand up and say, yes, that's what I believe. What are you going to do about it?
Let me ask you this, Doctor. Has your organization ever attempted to contact or to confront this small group of very powerful media people?
Well, in a certain sense, we do it. I have a weekly radio broadcast, American Dissident Voices.
Yes.
And probably the theme that I have dealt with more than any other is the effects of this Jewish media control on American life.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit this over and over and over again. I mean, I don't see any point in getting on the trying to get Sumner Redstone on the telephone or Michael Eisner on the telephone and begin an insulting match. I don't think that will accomplish anything. But so I speak out to the public. I say, look at what's happening. Look at who's responsible for this garbage coming into your children's TV sets through MTV. Look who's responsible for this. To me, that's my way of confronting these people.
You know, you look at the race hustlers and the poverty pimps like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. When they have a problem, they go right to what they feel is the source or the place that they can have that problem corrected. You may not, you said that you wouldn't want to call Michael Eisner and start an insulting match, and I don't suggest that that would be the way to do it, but I'm wondering, can you really say that you've done everything you can to try to influence them to change their ways if you haven't reached out to them?
No, I can't say that I've done everything that I might do. I'm one person, and I've got a finite number of people working with me, and we do what we can.
All right, now let me ask you this. What about, you know how the radical left is very good at rent-a-mob activities, where if they want to put a protest together, they'll even bus people in to do protests and carry signs and chant and make a hullabaloo. What about doing stuff like that in front of Sumner Redstone's house or Michael Eisner's house?
Well, sure, that's a possibility. And if we had more resources, I don't want to stop my weekly radio broadcast. I don't want to stop the print publications. I don't want to stop producing the music and the video games and other things we're doing. But as we grow, we may gain that capability. But we should not expect it to go for us the way it goes for them. The big difference is that they've got the media on their side. If Jesse Jackson goes to some businessman and he says, hey, look, I want you to start using advertising which shows white women with black men, and I want you to hire more black executives, and I would like a $50,000 kickback for myself, then the media are going to be on his side. And the businessmen know that, and that's what scares them. It's not Jesse Jackson that scares them. If he didn't have the media on his side, they would have somebody kick him out the back door.
What about a hostile takeover through the stock market of one of the major networks?
That's a wonderful daydream.
No, I mean,
what you're talking about is tens of billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And I just don't have that kind of money, and I don't have any friends that have that kind of money.
No, but you know what I'm saying, Doc, is you have an organization, you're building, you're growing, and it seems to me that in the future, you know, while people are out at their jobs investing in their 401ks and stuff, you know, those pension monies, they can be pooled together to do things. And, you know, you may not be able to do a hostile takeover, but you sure as heck may be able to acquire, you know, some type of persuasive interest.
Well, I mean, certainly you're right. In principle, there are many, many things that can be done, things that could be effective if they are done right and done on a sufficient scale, that we aren't doing simply because we can only do a few things at a time. We're able to do a lot more different types of things now than we were 10 years ago or even 2 years ago, but we haven't yet gotten to the point where I feel that we can do effective boycotts of products to cause companies to change their policies or take over companies by a selective buying of shares or anything of that sort. We just don't have that kind of economic power yet.
Okay. Now, a guy named Fred sends me instant messages while I'm on doing my radio show. And he said to me, one of the problems with our movement is that we're not for anything. We're always coming out against this and against that. And there's always a negative spin to what we do. Are we doing a terrible job of marketing?
Well, it may be. As I said earlier in the program, I do what comes naturally to me. And when I see a problem around me that I think needs addressing, I address that problem. But I also talk about the type of world that we would like to have, the sort of world that I think we can have. I do talk about positive themes, too, but the matter of fact is that we're in a war now, we're losing, and I'm not surprised that we sound negative a lot of the time.
Let's talk for a few minutes, if we can, about Resistance Records.
Okay.
You bought that when?
3 years ago.
And it was featured recently in a hit piece on VH1.
That's correct.
Would you tell our listeners how that evolved and, you know, what the result was?
When VH1 called me up to ask if they could do an interview, I'd never heard of VH1 before. I don't watch a lot of television, and I had heard of MTV, but not VH1. They're both owned by the same Jew, Sumner Redstone. But I inquired around and found out that it was a very influential music channel, just a little bit more conservative than MTV. And so I called him back and said, sure, we'll do an interview with you. And so we just worked it out. They wanted to talk to some of our bands. I put them in contact with our general manager in Cleveland, Eric Bleeby, and he persuaded some of the bands that we have contracts with to speak with these people. They came out here with a camera crew, and I talked to them, and some of the other people who work here with me talked to them, and gradually we put this thing together.
Now, you were portrayed, or Resistance Records was portrayed as hate.
Well, as I said, that's what they always do, and I was counting on that, but I'm also counting on the fact that some of the people who saw this program can make up their own minds, and they don't just accept at face value what the TV tells them.
Did you receive any positive feedback from the public, or was there a lot of...
Oh, we received a great deal of positive feedback. Part of the program consisted of interviews with the people who make the music, with the artists, the people in the bands. And these were guys that you just can't help but liking. There was a guy, Josh, from Carolina Sons. Every redneck in America can identify with Josh. There's another fellow named Sean Sugg from the band Max Resist. And he's just a very likable, natural sort of a guy. People in these bands talk about growing up in Detroit and how the neighborhoods changed and how they got beaten up by gangs of black kids when they tried to go to the corner drugstore, and how they had to, nowadays they have to buy their pizza through bars, through a grilled window, because the crime situation has gotten so bad. And they react to these things, and they express their feelings in their music. And this came out in a very natural way in VH1. They did a very good job, I must say, in portraying these things. But it was portrayed in such a way that maybe the Jews in Hollywood that worked for Sumner Redstone thought it made us look bad. But I think it made us look good to an awful lot of normal white Americans.
Now, recently, Resistance Records began advertising on my program a new video game, Ethnic Cleansing. And I think within about a week or two after those ads began running, the Anti-Defamation League released a press release about it, and I think they got you more publicity than you could have ever afforded to purchase on your own.
Well, they did. As a result of this Anti-Defamation League attack on us, I've probably done a dozen interviews just since that ADL release came out. I did an interview with ABC Nightly News. When was that? Well, earlier this week. I think it was Thursday. That will be broadcast, ABC World News Tonight, I think it's the program, Tuesday night.
Okay.
Of next week. But a lot of others, a lot of newspaper interviews, some other television interviews as a result of that that ADL attack on us. And, of course, there were some truthful things in that attack. They said that our game, Ethnic Cleansing, is technologically and artistically far above anything else in its genre. And that's true. And I think that caught people's attention and made people want to see the game and made people want to talk to us about it.
Now, I had been sent a copy of the game, but for some reason my CD didn't work, so they're going to send me another one. I haven't had a chance to play this yet. But while this brouhaha was going on over the last week or so, I have noticed here in the New York area television advertisements for another video game. It's called Grand Theft Auto. And the entire advertisement shows guys with machine guns mowing down cops, high-speed car chases, smashing into things, running pedestrians over, and they're advertising this on television. Why is your game so bad, and this game gets TV time?
Well, yeah, of course, our game is no more violent than the other video games out there. Video games basically are combat games. That's what the young white males that play these games, that's what attracts them. But it's the idea in our game. If it's a, for example, a World War II game in which American GIs are shooting up the bad Germans, that's okay. But if it's a game in which the white guys have banded together and they are cleaning out their urban areas, white guys against blacks and Hispanics and Jews, then they don't like that, because that gives young white people the idea that they can stick together and that they can win, that they can fight back. And that is something which is frightening to the people at the Anti-Defamation League.
Now, why is the ADL so influential? Is it because they're fellow Jews of the owners of the networks?
Well, it's just the most powerful Jewish lobby group in the country.
Well, it's really a pressure group.
It's a pressure group, yes. It's a pressure group, as a matter of fact, which has a lot of criminal connections. They had their offices out in Los Angeles and San Francisco are raided by police with search warrants who found 12,000 stolen confidential police files. The ADL had been bribing people in the police department to steal these files for them so that they could get information on all the people that they didn't like and apply pressure to these people, politicians and bureaucrats and so on. They would get information on their marital situation, on any arrests for drunken driving, whatever, anything that was in their police records, and then they could use that to apply pressure to people. They get money from gangsters out in Las Vegas back in 1985. They had their annual Torch of Liberty Award for one of the most notorious gangsters in the country, a Jewish gangster named Mo Dalitz, who used to run the Purple Gang in Detroit that engaged in contract murder and money laundering, drugs, white slavery, you name it. But you never hear about any of this in the media. The media cover up for these guys, and it's the media connections that they have which give them their power to intimidate.
So when the media covers the ADL press release, they never say Jewish pressure group or criminal, a group with criminal ties or that's been engaged in criminal activities.
No, they call them a human rights organization.
Oh, that's hysterical. But you end up being called every name in the book.
That's right.
And the media feels that this is fair?
Well, I don't know that they feel that it's fair, but they feel that it's in their interest to promote their own people, their fellow tribesmen in the Anti-Defamation League, and to attack me.
Let me ask you this, Doctor. When you do these interviews, like when someone calls you up and says, I'd like to talk to you about ethnic cleansing and the press release that the ADL issued, do you talk to them about the history of the ADL?
I do. Whenever the subject of the ADL comes up, I will bring these things up. But the media never report on that.
You know what I'd love to see on your website, and we're going to give that address out in a minute. I'd love to see a list of names of reporters that you have been interviewed by whom you have told of these ADL crimes. And then perhaps links to the articles that they did to show that they completely omitted the truth about the ADL.
Yeah, well, the fellow I just talked to Thursday, a fellow named Dean Reynolds, an interviewer for ABC News.
Yeah.
I'm sure he doesn't make the policy himself. Somebody else sets the policy about what you can talk about and what you can't talk about and what slant you have to take on this issue and so on.
Sure. Doc, we've got to go to a commercial break. We'll be back after about a minute. Folks, you're listening to The Hal Turner Show, live from New York, New York. Be back after this. Hi, folks. You know, the Turner Diaries is the Bible of the racist right, according to the controlled news media. In fact, the FBI claims that the Turner Diaries was the blueprint for the Oklahoma City bombing. Bookstores refused to sell it, but now you can own this hated and feared book. It's available from the National Vanguard Books online catalog at www.natvan.com. That's NATVAN.com. Or you can send $16 to National Vanguard Books, P.O. Box 90, Department A, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, and ask them for the Turner Diaries. What will you do when they come to take your guns? Read the Turner Diaries and see what a few determined patriots can accomplish. Truck bombs, airplanes flying into the Pentagon, white revolution. Many events predicted in this book have been coming true, and the multiculturalists and gun grabbers are afraid more will come true if people like you read the Turner Diaries. Get your copy today at www.natvan.com or send $16 to National Vanguard Books, P.O. Box 90, Department A, Hillsborough, West Virginia, 24946. Read the Turner Diaries. I have.
Are you a white woman such as myself who is sick of being harassed and tormented by the mud breeding in our once lovely communities? Don't stand for the degradation any longer. Fight for your race, your respect, and the safety of your children. Take back your country. Don't force your children to live in the world of disease, homosexuality, and race defilement that we've been forced to endure. To make a change in your life and the life of your children, call Aryan Nation's New Jersey State Office at 201-279-YHVH or contact us online at www.aryan-nations.org. Aryan Nations, for a whiter, brighter America.
This station is being brought to you via Nullsoft Shoutcast streaming technology. For more information, visit shoutcast.com.
And we're back. The Hal Turner Show. My special guest, Dr. William Pierce from the National Alliance Resistance Records. And I almost forgot, National Vanguard Books. Doctor, tell us about National Vanguard Books.
Well, I mentioned, I think, that from the beginning I wanted to build a multimedia communications infrastructure. And I started off with simple print media, leaflets, pamphlets, tabloid newspaper. And then I began writing books, publishing books, distributing books published by other people. And that pretty soon became a pretty large operation in itself. And so I separated off the publishing arm and the sales arm of our operation as a separate corporation, National Vanguard Books. And then National Alliance continued more along the line of recruiting and organizing through other means of outreach.
You know, it's amazing that all the things you're talking about, music, publications, websites, you also do a weekly radio broadcast, don't you?
That's correct.
American Dissident Voices. How do you see yourself as any kind of competition to the gigantic media that we all have a problem with?
Well, yes and no. Most people, of course, will not listen to what I'm saying because they haven't heard it before on television. And if they haven't seen it or heard it on television, it doesn't make sense to them. But we really are addressing ourselves only to a small minority of the white public, those who are capable of thinking for themselves and forming independent opinions about things. And so in that sense, we are not competing with the Disney Empire or ABC or CBS or any Hollywood. We're not competing with them. But eventually, when we get enough thinking people working together with us, we will compete with these people. We will begin to have an impact big enough that Sally Soccer Mom and Joe Sixpack will begin paying attention.
Well, they certainly pay attention when people like Abe Foxman speak out, as evidenced by the big fiasco they were able to generate with a single press release. I also am told that the ADL approaches police departments to try to instruct them on who to look out for and how to deal with hate. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, that's been one of the most worrisome things that I have seen, is this cozying up to law enforcement agencies of the Anti-Defamation League. The ADL sends people around to law enforcement officials, and they say, hey, this hate crime thing is becoming more and more important. You have to know how to recognize a hate crime. You have to be able to spot people who are likely to commit hate crimes. You need experts who can tell you about these things. Now, we will tell you about these things. We're experts on hate crimes, and so we'll teach you how to enforce these new laws against hate crimes. Well, that's like a mafia going to the FBI and say, hey, buddy, we'll teach you how to deal with organized crime. We're experts in that, and we'll show you who the bad guys are and who the good guys are. It scares the hell out of me, and I have sent mailings out to police departments around the country talking to them about this problem. I said, you cannot depend upon the Anti-Defamation League. This is a criminal organization. They have all sorts of criminal affiliations. But the ADL, of course, approaches these people at the political level, up at the top. And unfortunately, many of these police agencies have become politicized, where they don't really care about anything except what's going to get them elected to the next higher office.
Mm. Have you thought about making the same political approach? You know, I mean, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Well,
can you imagine the implication of saying, hello, Mr. Mayor, you realize that, you know, by bringing the ADL in here, you've willfully affiliated with a criminal organization?
Yeah, well, of course, what the mayor will do then is he will talk to his advisors, and his advisors will say, well, you know, that may be true, but don't worry about it. The New York Times is never going to say anything about that. The Washington Post is never going to say anything about that.
Mm.
Who cares?
Okay.
The main thing is that the ADL smells good in all of these newspapers and all of these television stations that you depend upon for support.
Yeah. Well, it makes a lot of sense. Now, let's talk about American Dissident Voices. You only do it once a week.
That's right. Once a week. A half-hour program once a week.
And it comes out on the website, what, www.natall.com?
That's right. And natvan.com.
And
natvan.com.
What day is the show posted, the new show?
It's posted early Saturday morning.
What topics do you cover?
Just about any topic that you can think of. To a large extent, it's whatever catches my imagination during the week. I've talked a lot about this this war against terror. I've talked a lot about what's going on in the Middle East. I've talked about the crime situation in America. I've talked about the double standard in the media on so-called hate crimes. I talked a lot, for example, about the dragging in Jasper, Texas, and the enormous hullabaloo that the media made about that. And I pointed out when a dragging the killing of a white man by three blacks who had given him a ride, same place, Jasper, Texas, just about a month ago, they picked up a white guy who was looking for a ride. Then they asked him for money, and he said he didn't have that much money. He started to run. They chased him down in their car, their pickup truck, knocked him down with their truck, beat him up, and then ran their truck over him and dragged him along the road and killed him. And nobody has heard about that. That they decided, well, we don't want that to get out. It might hurt race relations. And so they haven't said anything about that. That was a month ago in the same place that this enormous hullabaloo about the dragging of this black ex-convict by three white guys back 3 years ago caused such a fuss.
And we are called racists if we raise the most recent issue. But nobody's called racially divisive for raising the first dragging death when it was a black victim.
Yeah, and that's again only one case. One can pick hundreds of similar cases. You mentioned the case of Matthew Shepard,
yes.
this homosexual who made the mistake of going into the wrong bar to try to pick up a couple of dates.
Yep.
And got himself tied to a fence and pistol whipped and died of exposure. That made a huge nonstop hullabaloo in the media. But when a couple of adult homosexuals get a 13-year-old kid, essentially kidnap him, drug him, tie him up, and rape him to death, it's hushed up lest it cause hostility against homosexuals.
Right. So hostility against whites is fine. Hostility against anybody else is not to be had.
That's correct. That's the politically correct party line pushed by the media.
Now, I raise these issues on my show, on my website. You talk about it in American Dissident Voices. Do you still publish newspapers?
Excuse me, do we sell newspapers?
Do you still publish newspapers? You mentioned earlier that you...
We publish magazines, we publish books, we publish pamphlets and so on. We do not have a newspaper at this time.
Okay.
We have a publication that comes out every month which has the texts of the radio broadcast illustrated in them called Free Speech.
Oh.
It's not really a newspaper, it's a magazine.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. Would you like to take some phone... Oh, wait, before we go to the phones. I have been asked to ask you, did you know, let's see, a fella named Rockwell, George Lincoln Rockwell?
Yes, I did know him.
And did you have a good relationship with him?
Yes, I only knew him for about a year before he was assassinated. I learned a lot from him. I saw the first time I became aware of him, I saw him on a television news program. He was trying to give a speech to a group of students at some university out in California. And some of the students were trying to listen to him, and other students were trying to keep the ones who wanted to hear him from listening to him. And they were throwing bottles at him and trying to shout him down and so on. But I caught just a few sentences. My curiosity was aroused. Why won't they let the guy speak? They may not agree with him, but why are they trying to stop the other students from hearing what he has to say? And especially since he said some things that I agreed with. I can't remember exactly what he said at the time, but I was interested enough so that I wrote a letter to him. And then when I was teaching at a university at the time, and then when I came to a meeting of the American Physical Society in Washington, I made a point of meeting him and talking to him, and I learned a lot from him. And then, unfortunately, he was killed just a year later.
Let me ask you two final questions before we go to the phones. If you could address a joint session of the United States Congress, what would you ask them to do?
I don't think I would waste my time.
All right.
I don't think any of those guys are reachable. I think that they know which side their bread is buttered on, and so I try to reach responsible, honest, decent people. I don't mess with the politicians.
Okay.
We'll deal with the politicians later.
All right. Let me give the phone number for people to call, although the phone lines are blinking already. It's 1-800-TALK-419. It's 1-800-825-5419. Ready to take some calls, Doc?
Sure.
All right. Hang on a second. Hi, you're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are you and where are you calling from?
This is Phil from Omaha.
Phil in Omaha, Nebraska. You're on with Dr. William Pierce.
Dr. Pierce, how you doing tonight?
Yeah, I can barely hear you. I don't know if you're not speaking loudly enough or whether there's a problem with the switchboard in the studio.
All right. Is that better?
No, but maybe Mr. Turner can repeat your question if you have a question for me.
Go ahead, Phil.
All right. First of all, I'd like to thank Morris Deese from the Southern Poverty Law Center for putting out a publication called The False Patriots, The Threat of Anti-Government Extremists, because your picture's in there, Dr. Pierce, along with August Christ and some other ones. And that's how I learned the truth, is by these left-wing publications out there. And I'd like to know, my question here is, to what magnitude is he seeing an increase in the people that are inquiring about our sad state here? Is it increased 50% in the last year or 5 years or 200%? How much increase?
All right. The question, Doctor, is how much of an increase have you seen in people inquiring about our sad state of affairs? Has it been 50%, 200% in the last year? And he also said that he found out about you thanks to a publication of the Southern Poverty Law Center that showed your picture.
Well, I'm sure that some people contacted us as a result of the activities of the Southern Poverty Law Center. But I don't think that's been a major factor. I read that stuff, and a few other people who are concerned about these left-wing pressure groups read what he puts out. But the most of the people that we're trying to reach don't even know who Morris Deese is. I think they should. I think he's a dangerous man, and I think people should know what he's doing. But I don't think he's a major factor in putting us in contact with new people.
All right, Phil, thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Take care. All righty. Now let's see if we go to the next line here. Hi, you're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are you and where are you calling from?
This is Jay from Wantagh.
Jay, please speak up.
This is Jay from Wantagh.
Yes, you're on with Dr. William Pierce.
How you doing, Dr. Pierce?
Fine, thank you.
You know, it's funny you brought up Matthew Shepard, because just before the show, I was going through my cable channel scan, and guess what I saw? This show called A Portrait of Hate, the Matthew Shepard story. I never saw anything in my life so slanted. Here's this wonderful, studious, and wouldn't harm a fly faggot, and these two rednecks go in a truck, take him out, and just beat on him because they didn't like him. Well, I heard it wasn't quite like that. No, it's amazing. You know, there's no credibility, there's no accountability for these people. There's no accountability for either media or government. And, you know, I'm really glad people are going out there like Hal, yourself, and just, you know, finally starting to talk about it and making some sort of movement out of this.
Did you hear him, Doc?
Well, I could only catch about every other word. Maybe if you could just repeat the gist of the question.
He said that it was interesting that you mentioned Matthew Shepard, because just before he tuned into this program, he saw a documentary called the Matthew Shepard Incident, or something to that effect, where it basically showed this humble, polite, innocent, helpless homosexual that just happened to get beat up by two rednecks. And he said that we all know that wasn't the case, because Shepard, you know, went in to actually try to pick somebody up. And he said the both the media and the government lies, and none of them are accountable.
Well, that's true. I mean, this business of political correctness is not concerned with what's true. It's only concerned with what's politically correct. And the media and the politicians both are slavishly marching in lockstep to this politically correct party line. Matthew Shepard got killed because he was cruising and he went into the wrong bar to find a date.
Well, Jay, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right. All right, now let's see who we go to next. Hang on, Doc. Hello, you're on the Hal Turner Show.
Okay.
Who are you and where are you calling from?
Well, my name is Dave. I'm calling from Nyack.
Dave from Nyack, New York, please speak up. You're on with Dr. William Pierce.
Well, you know, the whole thing is, I think it's really on a lot of people's minds these days, and it's really waking a lot of people up, is the horror show that's been going on in the Middle East. The Middle East mess, and the images of the ugly violence and the oppression that have been broadcast into our homes now for, I mean, it's going on almost 15 years since the mid-80s, ad nauseum for all this time. And unlike other conflicts such as the Beijing massacre and the Bosnian war, the American people have remained really seemingly unconcerned and even unmoved by the plight of the oppressed victims of the brutal military occupation such as that's being endured by the Palestinian people for the past 50 years in their ancestral territories. And other Americans have continued to observe the situation, as Dr. Pierce has said, with apathy and pretty much a kind of a brain-dead lack of interest at the staggering hypocrisy and bias that our government and our media have practiced and are pursuing in our policies towards this conflict. And these conditions continue to go on, and the President, Bush, he has the gall to stand up on national television and the American people that this catastrophe that happened to us on 9/11 is a result of Arab disdain for our freedoms. And to me, this is an act of brazen and unrepentant pro-Israeli Zionist propaganda, and is an act of treason. And I'm just wondering what Dr. Pierce thinks about this whole situation in the Middle East and what we can do about it.
All right, Doc, he wants to know what you think about the situation in the Middle East. He's shocked at the U.S. people's seeming lack of concern about the brutal military operations being conducted against the indigenous Arabs there by the Israelis, that for a couple of years, maybe a decade, we've seen graphic images of violence and oppression over there. And he's shocked at the staggering bias of our government and its pro-Israeli leanings.
Well, yeah, certainly it is disappointing that the American people
let their government do whatever it wants in the area of foreign policy, and it's almost like it's not real to the American people. But I don't think the situation is quite as bad as it was before September 11th. I think that September 11th proved to the American people that what their government does in the area of foreign policy can have real-world effects. It can result in hurting people back here in this country. 3,000 people, 3,000 Americans lost their lives because the American people let the government have this Israel-first policy in the Middle East for the past 54 years. And it has real consequences for us. And so I think that there are many people who have started to think about this since September 11th. I think the situation is not quite as bad as it was before September 11th.
So you don't buy President Bush's explanation that...
You mean that Osama bin Laden attacked us for no good reason just because he hates our freedom? Well, that's baloney, and I think everybody with half a brain understands that, that we were attacked because we have been supporting Israel's aggression against the other people of the Middle East.
Okay, well, thanks for the call. Let's move on here. Hang on. Hi, you're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are you and where are you calling from?
Bob from Jersey.
I'm sorry, Bob from New Jersey?
We're in your area.
Yes, I'm having a hard time hearing you. Please speak up.
Well, basically, you guys sound like total idiots. You are espousing things that are entirely untrue. You're misrepresenting the facts. I mean, I don't remember any case of any whites who killed black people that captured the news for almost 2 years of continuous coverage. I don't remember any presidential campaigns being swung by putting up a white criminal and or black hands crumpling up a paycheck with a thinly veiled reference to affirmative action, etc. The situations that you bemoan so often on the air are due to the history of this country. These are steps that were made necessary. Did you know that there was a Civil Rights Act of 1866? Did you know that the federal government refused to obey the law for almost 100 years and we had to write the law again? It was all covered 100 years before. I don't think either of you know anything of what you're really speaking of. You're the same race-baiting race pimps that you accuse Jackson of being. You make your living off these poor people, finding them in the midst of their problems and telling them that it's some black person 2,000 miles away that's the cause of their problem. The fact is that violence attends poverty, and that was true in the Northeast when it was European immigrants that were populating the ghettos and on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, etc. They were Italians, they were Jews, they were Poles, they were Germans. They were all of the, I believe the Statue of Liberty says, wretched refuse of Europe's teeming shores.
Well, Bob, first, let me take issue with some of the things that you claim to be facts. When the Depression happened in the 1920s, there was no, I repeat, no increase in crime. And those statistics are available from the various government agencies, and you can get them on the Internet.
That's false.
So for you to say that crime is tied to poverty is incorrect. And further proof of that, Bob, is that over the last 30 years, this nation has spent over $5 trillion, that's trillion with a T, on the so-called war on poverty, to give people a hand up. And it hasn't worked. In fact, crime has gotten demonstrably worse since the Great Society program was implemented. Now, with respect to people bemoaning the current state of affairs and you blaming the United States for causing this, and it's saying that these changes, things like affirmative action, are necessary because of the past, you may be right, but at what point has something been corrected? At what point is it good enough?
The point of equity. You can easily...
And who decides that, Bob?
It's easy. if 20% of the community is of a particular background and they're not represented in all walks of life,
yeah,
presumption is that there is an impediment to that, because the natural, if you're talking to a scientist, he knows that the rule in nature is homeostasis.
So what you're saying is we will not consider personal ability, we will not consider effort and hard work. You want to say if there's 20% black, then 20% of the blacks have to have 20% of the positions in the community. Is that what you're saying?
We support that community that's falling behind until they catch up. That's not the same thing as saying give it to them if they can't do the job. It says give them the remedial education. You're in a New York area. Look at the big hullabaloo when open admissions, open enrollment was challenged. The fact is that if you give these students that are poor performing students that year of remedial education, they do just as well as any other student. And in fact, the City University produces more PhDs per undergraduate than virtually any other university system in the country. And it's an open enrollment system. That's just one example.
Well, Bob, I appreciate your comments. Dr. Pierce, did you have anything to add?
No, I couldn't listen. I couldn't hear everything that that he was saying.
Well, Bob, thank you for the call.
That he feels that the major cause of crime is poverty. Is that correct?
Yes, and that that the historic bias and historic troubles of this country made programs like affirmative action necessary, and we have to, you know, give a hand up to these minority communities. If there's 20% minority population in a community, but that same 20% is not reflected, you know, in the upper echelons or in the employment, then those communities are entitled to a redress of that.
Yeah, well, I don't agree with that at all. The major cause of crime is not the poverty, but it is alienation. It is loss of a sense of responsibility, a loss of the feeling of community that used to be much stronger in this country. And the main impact on our feeling of identity and our sense of responsibility in community has been multiculturalism. That is what has caused this country to go to hell.
Well, I agree with you. Hold on a second. We'll get to another call. Hi, you're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are you and where are you calling from?
Good evening, Mr. Turner. Yankee Jim.
Jim from Woodstock area, New York.
That big Jewish playground.
A big Jewish playground.
Right near Woodstock.
You're on with Dr. William Pierce.
What a pleasure. Before, Dr. Pierce, I have a feeling you may know who you're talking to. You like my truck sign so much you put it on the cover of the bulletin one month.
You like Jim's truck sign so much, Doc, you put it on the cover of your bulletin one month.
Is this Jim Leshkovich?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Yes, it is, sir. Before I ask my question, I'd just like to say, Dr. Pierce, I'm very proud to say that I've been a member of the National Alliance for about 3 years now. I encourage all proud white people to join. Not just go visit the site, that's natal.com, just go to the site and join what I consider to be the organization for white people who want to see their children and grandchildren survive. And when I got detained by a Jewish cop down at the Washington National Airport for 2 hours and harassed, it just drove me a little harder. But I've got a question for you, Dr. Pierce.
All right, go ahead with your question, Jim.
As finally as you can, Jim, so I can make out what you're saying.
I'm reading a book right now, Henry Ford and the Jews, Mass Production of Hate.
Excuse me, the title again?
Mass Production of Hate, Henry Ford and the Jews.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
He's reading Mass Production of Hate, Henry Ford and the Jews.
Okay.
Whoop. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
This book was just published in 2001. Now, my 16-year-old Lemming daughter, one day, she came out of left field, and she mentioned Henry Ford and the Nazis all in the same breath. My Lemming mother also mentioned something about seeing Henry Ford on a TV show, being the lemming that she is. Now, my question to you is this. Do you see the Jews going after Ford Motor? Excuse me. Do you think the Jews are going to be going after Ford Motor Company next?
All right. His question, doctor, is do you think Jews are going to go after Ford Motor Company, seeing as recently in the news there have been associations between Henry Ford and Nazism?
Well, Henry Ford was aware of the infiltration of Jews into the power centers in this country, their takeover of the media way back in the first decades of the last century. And he spoke out about it. Every Jewish organization has been aware of that, and they've taught their people about this. The Henry Ford's book, The International Jew, has been sort of the whipping boy for them for the better part of a century. So I don't think that this is anything new to them, and I doubt that it will influence their buying power, their choice of what kind of car to buy these days.
All right.
The Ford Motor Company long ago lost the principles that Henry Ford Sr. Gave the company.
Jim, thanks for the call.
See you soon, Dr. Pierce.
Take care.
Yep.
All righty. And I'm sorry about that technical squeal there, Doc. I was trying to improve the audio quality being fed to you, but I overdid it. All right, let's see. Hi, you're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are you and where are you calling from? Sonny from Las Vegas, you're on with Dr. William Pierce.
Well, thank you. Dr. Pierce, it's a great honor to speak with you.
It's a great honor to speak with you, Doc.
Good. I'm a national socialist in the broad sense of the term. I believe it to be a very malleable ideology. And I'm interested in practical strategy and tactics for not only extricating ourselves from our current predicament, but also governing ourselves afterward. I wondered what your take on socialism is, because I've heard a few callers on talk shows suggest that National Socialism had taken the German people's rights away and seized their firearms and so forth. And one I even heard suggest that it was a well-known fact that the SS officers were all homosexual. What is your take on National Socialism?
All right, Dr. Pierce, he wants to know your take on National Socialism. He is a National Socialist in the broad sense of the term. He feels it's a malleable ideology. He wants to know what you think our tactics should be for extricating ourselves from our current predicament and how to govern ourselves afterwards. Is National Socialism a way to go?
Well, that sounds like three or four different questions. One of the questions was, how should we extricate ourselves from our present situation?
Yes.
And that's a big question. One thing we have to do, one part of the answer to that, is that we have to get our people to understand what's being done to them and why. And that's really everything that we are focusing our efforts on in the National Alliance, to communicate with the people, to get them to understand, to get them to take a position. As to the type of government that we will end up with after we get ourselves out of this mess, that's a lot of speculation involved there, because we're so far away from that. We may be in a civil war situation for a long time, where we will have to have very, very strict rules, almost a military-type judgment or a dictatorship. Or we may end up with a lot of small, isolated communities which can be self-governing. These people might choose different ways of governing themselves. But I do think that the principle that will be most important for us to have as the basis of whatever system of government we have in the future is that the interests of our people must come first, that we must make the government the servant of the people and not the other way around. That whatever advances our people, whatever makes our people healthier, whatever makes our people more secure, that must be the basis of governmental policy, not whatever makes some company get a one-up on some other company in the oil pipeline business or that helps get more votes for some party, or that gives some minority something that they've been screaming for. We've got to make the health and the welfare and the advancement of our people the primary consideration for whatever the government does in the future. And if you call that National Socialism, then that's what we got to have.
Sonny, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All righty. All right, then let's get to our next caller. Hello, you're on the Hal Turner Show with Dr. William Pierce. Who are you and where are you calling from?
It's Jim from New York.
Jim?
Get on.
Jim from New York. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, how are you, Mr. Turner?
Yes.
First I want to say regarding the Matthew Shepard case, there is a movie coming on HBO tomorrow called The Laramie Project, and that's the whole life story. And it's, of what happened to Matthew Shepard.
You mean the Laramie Project?
Laramie Project, yes.
Right, the story of Matthew Shepard, okay.
Because are you familiar with that Fred Phelps, the God Hates Fags?
I have heard of Fred Phelps, God Hates Fags.
But he's coming down to New York tomorrow to protest.
Oh, is that right?
The premiere of that movie. Yeah, he's going to be in front of the HBO building.
Okay.
He's also going to be in front of the fire department.
Are you going to be...
Which I kind of think is in bad taste because he's... because of Michael Judge, who was the chaplain of the fire department, was a homosexual.
Yeah.
And he's saying that all the firemen are in hell and this and that. But, you know, I don't think that's really appropriate.
Do you have a question?
In any case, he's going to be in New York tomorrow. So.
Do you have a question for my guest, Dr. William Pierce?
For Dr. Pierce, I see a contradiction. He claims to represent white people, and yet he often sides with these ragheads. Who blew up the World Trade Center and he basically sides with these people.
All right, let me ask him that. Dr. Pierce?
He's part of many of the Arab terrorists.
Jim in New York City, who sounds suspiciously like Jamal, says that you claim to be for white people, but you often side with what he called ragheads who blew up the World Trade Center and who kill a lot of innocent Americans.
Well, I've never been on the side of Osama bin Laden or Al Qaeda, and in fact, I wouldn't pay much attention to what the Jews and the Arabs are doing to each other in the Middle East if we weren't involved in it. If our government would just pull out and say, "Okay, you settle your own affairs," I wouldn't worry a lot about that. I am concerned about it because our government is like the dog being wagged by the Israeli tail. We are basing our policy in that whole part of the world on what's good for Israel and not what's good for the American people. And that makes me concerned for it, and it really biases me in favor of the people who are at least fighting against the same thing I think we need to fight against, and that's Jewish power in that part of the world.
Well, really, what you're indicting is the whole federal government, the whole system.
He says you're indicting the whole federal government, the whole system.
That's right, I am.
He says he is. Jim, thanks for the call.
Okay.
All right, let's move along here. Lots of different callers. I'm pleased. Hold on a second. Hi, Hal Turner Show. You're on with Dr. William Pierce. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hi, Hal and Dr. Pierce. This is Paul from Lambertville.
Paul from Lambertville, New Jersey. Welcome.
I have a question, or really one comment and a question. For one, I'm hoping that Dr. Pierce might be able to help you out, Hal, through advertisement to keep your show going. I think that's...
You're asking Dr. Pierce to help me out through advertising my show. Well, I don't think he expected that, but okay.
No, because it's in, I think, Dr. Pierce and all our interests to keep your show going, Hal. And I would hope Dr. Pierce is aware of how cheap it is to run your show anyway on a monthly basis, only about $2,000 a month.
Right. Well, I'm not here to pitch the good doctor to support my show, but...
Well, I will, though. Anyway, the question I have for Dr. Pierce is sometimes it seems like he adopts the language of the left in defense of the Palestinians, and I kind of argue that, let's say, Israel escaped from the planet Earth, disappeared from the planet Earth. Do you really think the Muslims would harbor no aggression towards white Western civilization, or is it really just because of the Jewish influence that causes?
All right, Doc, he's asking, he said that sometimes you use the language of the left to defend Palestinians, and he wonders if Israel disappeared from the planet tomorrow, if it moved to outer space, do you really think that Muslims would not harbor malice toward whites and Western civilization?
To stay out of their part of the world. I think they are very unhappy about other things besides our support of Israeli aggression in that part of the world. I think the people who take their religion seriously over there, especially the Muslim fundamentalists, would just assume that we not come over there and set up McDonald's hamburger stands, that we not try
try to push our Hollywood movies down the throats, that we not try to control the policies of their governments. I think that they would prefer to run things to suit themselves and not have us come over there and tell them how to do things. So sure, I think there's a lot of hostility toward us because we have been pretty arrogant in our behavior in that part of the world.
All right, Paul, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Take care. All righty, and... Hi, you're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are you and where are you calling from?
This is Jake from Seattle.
Jake, you're really going to have to speak up from Seattle. You're on with Dr. William Pierce.
All right, thank you. Dr. Pierce, it's an honor to speak with you. I've been listening to your broadcast for quite some time now.
Been listening to you for quite some time now. Go ahead.
And I work in government.
Okay.
I have a fairly prominent position, although not that prominent. My question is I've been reluctant to join organizations such as this, more fear that I will be compromised and I'll lose my job. And I know that's sort of a poor excuse, but I can do more good by contributing money and staying out of things than I can by going in the poorhouse. And my question is, if I join, can you guarantee that I won't be compromised and experience retribution?
All right, Doc. this gentleman says he works in government in a somewhat prominent position, that he's listened to you for a long time, but he's reluctant to join the National Alliance for fear that he would be compromised and lose his job. He says he feels he can get a lot more accomplished by sending you money, and if he did join the organization, can you guarantee that he would not be compromised and lose his job?
Well, I'm not aware that it's ever happened that somebody has been fired because... he has been a member of the National Alliance as long as that person didn't advertise it. We don't advertise people's names unless they themselves have already gone public. That is, we don't force people to come out of the closet, so to speak. But we have nothing against people sending us money. I think that's great. But I do think that there should come a time in every man's life when it's time for him to stand up for what he believes in and speak out and say, I'm so-and-so, and this is what I believe, and by God, I'm going to fight for it.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All righty. Oh, my goodness me, the phone lines are just jammed. Here we go. Hello, you're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are... Oops. Doc?
Yeah.
They hung up. Hold on a second. Hello, you're on the Hal Turner Show with Dr. William Pierce. Who are you and where are you calling from?
My name is Eric.
Eric?
From San Diego.
In San Diego. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. Wow, that's kind of interesting. I'm listening, and I'm hearing someone else talking right now.
Yes, there's a two-minute delay between the time we speak here and the time you hear it on the computer.
Oh, correct. Well, I just wanted to say, Dr. Pierce, wow, you really opened my eyes. I'd say that you're right up there with Shakespeare. That's what I have to say. Dr. Pierce is right up there with Beethoven and Mozart. question. Dr. Pierce, what do you feel about these people with Down syndrome? These people that have, you know, they have children and have a 50% chance of having a child with Down syndrome. And what do you feel about that? What do you think we should do about that situation? I mean, I personally am going to have an ultrasound test, and I'm probably going to abort my child, even though I don't agree with, you know, abortion, you know, with... with people just having abortions, I don't agree with that at all. But I think white people should be having more babies. But what do you think about Down syndrome people? What should we do about that situation?
All right. Eric in San Diego says that you have opened his eyes. He compares you to Shakespeare, Beethoven, and Mozart.
Wow.
Yeah. But he wants to know, what do you feel about people with Down syndrome, babies who may have Down syndrome? Apparently, his wife is pregnant, and there's a chance that the baby is going to have Down syndrome.
Oh, no, not at all.
No.
If I was just saying that I'm going to have an ultrasound test, and I would get it checked out.
Oh, he said he's going to have an ultrasound test, and he's going to get it checked out. But how does he feel? How do you feel about aborting, you know, children that may have Down syndrome?
If the fetus indicates Down syndrome, I would go for an abortion.
All right. Did you hear that, Eric?
He would abort it.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes. That's exactly how I feel. Yeah. The way I feel, I just wanted to say, is that if you have a child like that, being, you know, kind of in a national socialist myself, I believe that the child should probably, you know, not be supported by the state You'd have to raise it yourself with absolutely no funding, or you could have it, and it would have to be sterilized under that circumstance, or you could have it euthanized. I wanted to know what he thought about that.
Well, he feels that people who have Down syndrome children should be required to take care of them solely at their own expense. They should not be supported by the state. And how do you feel about that and about the idea of sterilizing such Down syndrome people?
Well, I think we do have to worry about the overall genetic health of our population. I think it would be criminally irresponsible to make it possible for people with Down syndrome to reproduce. They don't have to be euthanized, but if a family is determined that they want to raise a child with Down syndrome, I think that's their business. And I do agree, it should be done at their expense, not at public expense.
All right. And, Eric, I will tell you that ultrasound does not detect Down syndrome. The test that determines that is amniocentesis, and that cannot be done until the fifth month of pregnancy.
Correct, yes.
Thanks.
I just wanted to say hello from Politics Lobby 3. We're all with you, Dr. Pearson. We all talk about you all the time.
I'll tell him. He says, hello from Politics Lobby 3. They love you, and they talk about you all the time. All right. Let's get to another call here. Hello, you're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are you, and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Glenn, and I'm calling from New Jersey.
Glenn in New Jersey. Welcome to the program.
All right, I'd just like to say that I'm a member of the National Alliance, and I'd just like to counteract what Bob said before. We're not all Jewish nitwits out here in New Jersey. I have the distinct honor of looking at a picture of myself and Dr. Pierce at a leadership conference from 2 years ago. And I just have a question for Dr. Pierce. I would like to know what he sees for us in the next 10 years. With regards to white people in the United States and our situation, how he sees it going one way or the other.
All right, Doc. Glenn in New Jersey says that he's a member of the National Alliance and that he wants to refute our previous caller, Bob from New Jersey. He said that we're not all Jewish nitwits in New Jersey. And he's very proud to be looking at a picture of himself with you at a leadership conference from 2 years ago. And he asks, where do you see white people in 10 years?
Well, I don't really regard myself as a prophet. The way things are going now, it is certainly not good. But history has a way of surprising us all. Our responsibility now, regardless of the way things are going, is just to do the best we can to try to turn things around, to do the best we can to try to reach our fellow men and women and get them to think and to take responsibility. And if we do a good enough job of that, then we can turn this thing around, and 10 years from now, things might be getting better instead of continuing to get worse.
Glenn, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All righty, and you're on the Hal Turner Show with Dr. William Pierce. Who are you, and where are you calling from?
My name's Ryan, and I'm calling from California.
Ryan in California. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'd just like to start off by saying thank you, Mr. Turner, for having Dr. Pierce on.
You're welcome.
And also, I'd like to say that it is truly an honor to be speaking with Dr. Pierce this evening. I am a member of the National Alliance, and I have been for about 2 years now. And I'm young, 21 years old, but very appreciative of what he is doing. I would like to ask Dr. Pierce if he has any recommendations on what members can do in order to increase our activity as far as getting the word out.
All right, Doc, this is Ryan. He's a 21-year-old member of the National Alliance in California. He's been in the organization for about 2 years. He appreciates your effort, and he wants to know, what do you recommend as the most effective way for members to proceed, to recruit, to spread the word?
Well, that really depends upon the individual member, upon his own personality, his own resources, his own situation. People do different things. Some people are good at dealing with the public, and they can go into a shopping mall and hand out literature to people. Others are much more private, and they can help us in the way that our people here on the staff do by doing very specific technical things that need to be done to produce the materials that go out through our various media. Other people are in a better financial situation, and they can do more to support us financially than some people can. It all depends upon your individual circumstances and your abilities, your inclinations. But each person must decide what it is that he can do best, and then devote all of his energy, all of his commitment to doing that thing.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All righty. And moving along here.
Doctor,
hello, you're on the Hal Turner Show with Dr. William Pierce. Who are you and where are you calling from?
My name is Tom, and I'm calling from New York.
Tom in New York, welcome to the show. What's up?
Okay. I believe it seems to me that if American government was not supporting the state of Israel, that the Muslims would probably still be hostile toward us, given that, you know, we attempted to destroy their, you know, the center of their culture during the Crusades. And they have attempted since then to invade Europe and basically destroy, you know, white European Christian culture.
All right, Dr. Tom in New York says that if the U.S. was not supportive of Israel, that he believes the Muslims would still hate us because we tried to destroy their culture during the Crusades.
Well, I think that's baloney. I mean, they might still hate us because of what we're doing to their culture right now, but I don't think a few scholars over there may be concerned with what we did back during the Crusades, but I think mostly they're concerned with how we are impacting their lives and their culture and their religion now. And
well,
if we stayed out of their affairs and minded our own business and looked out for American interest only and not for Israel's interest, I think we would have a minimal problem with the Muslims in the Middle East.
Well,
quickly, Tom.
Okay, I agree, but I also believe that maybe, you know, to them it seems that basically the Crusades haven't ended.
Yeah, so you think...
And they have been continuing for the last 1,000 years.
You think the Muslims perceive that the Crusades have never ended?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, and the situation, our support of Israel only worsens, exacerbates the whole situation.
And our support of Israel exacerbates the situation. Well, thanks for the call. You can listen to the doctor's answer online. Go ahead, Doc, what do you think?
Okay, what's the question again?
Did the Crusades end?
I think the average Muslim, I mean, even the average Muslim cleric, I don't think worries about the Crusades. He's worried about what we're doing today.
I agree. All right, let's move along here. Hello, you're on the Hal Turner Show with Dr. William Pierce.
How you doing, Hal?
Good. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm Kevin.
Kevin in Connecticut. Welcome.
Howdy, sir. How you doing, Hal?
Good. What's your question for Dr. Pierce?
Well, first of all, I want to know what can be done to end the stereotype that we all support the Jews.
What can be done to end the stereotype that all Americans support Israel?
Well, it's certainly true that all Americans don't support Israel. And I think that as more and more Americans wake up to the consequences of this blind support of Israel, that the number who are supporting Israel will continue to decline. But really, the only thing that can be done, I think, to end this stereotype is for people to demand that their government change its policies, that the government start looking out for American interests instead of for Israeli interests.
Okay, Kevin, thanks for the call. Quickly.
Just wanted to comment. I've enjoyed both his books.
He says he's enjoyed both your books. Thanks, Kev. All righty. And let's see. I'm only going to take two more calls because we're running out of time here. So let me get this one. Hi, you're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are you and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Greg from Long Island, Mr. Turner.
Greg in Long Island, welcome. You're on with Dr. William Pierce.
Dr. Pierce, obviously I'm not talking to him, but Dr. Pierce, I'd like to know what your involvement will be with the World Church of the Creator, who I know you have been involved with in York, Pennsylvania, and what will be your involvement with the future endeavors from here until and from here on.
All right. Greg in New York says, what is your involvement with the World Church of the Creator? He says that he believes you were involved with them in York, Pennsylvania, and what will be your involvement, if any, in the future?
We have no connection with or involvement with any other organization. Some individual alliance members were in York during a recent clash between people that were on the side of the blacks and multiculturalism up there. But there is no connection at all between the National Alliance and the World Church of the Creator, and I do not anticipate that there will be one in the future.
Okay, Greg, thanks for the call. And let's see. Oh, hi, you're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are you and where are you calling from? They hung up. All right, I can get this other one. Hi, you're on the Hal Turner Show with Dr. William Pierce. Who are you and where are you calling from?
I'm Eric. I called before.
Nope, Eric, one call tonight. I'm sorry. There's so many people calling. I can't let somebody get in a second time. Hang on a second here. Hi, you're on the Hal Turner Show with Dr. William Pierce. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
How you doing? This is Dale calling from New Zealand.
Dale in New Zealand. Welcome to the program.
I'd just like to, first of all, say to Dr. Pierce that I've been listening to his show for the last 2 years.
Okay.
Doing it on the Internet. And always very much enjoyed it.
Okay.
Very good show.
We're running out of time. Ask your question.
I've got a question for Dr. Pierce.
Go ahead.
Does he see any value in, say, like the Yahoo voice chat rooms? I mean, I frequent them on the Internet, and, you know, just trying to get the word out. There's not a lot of places, you know, one can speak out freely these days.
All right. Dale in New Zealand asks if you see any value in the voice chat rooms on the Yahoo service to try to get the get the word out.
Well, you know, I have a big debate with my own people about that. I'm pretty negative toward a lot of this this gossip that goes on the Internet because people don't use their real names and they don't really take responsibility for their views. But some people swear to me that it's a good way to educate people and to recruit people. I'm probably mellowing a little bit on that. I used to be very much against it. I had a very negative attitude toward it, but I let our people do that if they feel that's the way they can be effective.
Did you get that, Dale?
Yes, I did.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Dale.
Okay, and tell you what, Doctor, we've run out of time. It's 10:58. Thank you very much for being here. Would you like to give the website addresses out again that people can visit?
Yes, they can go to resistance.com if they're primarily interested in our video games or our music CDs. They can go to NatVan, that's NATVAN.com, or NatAll, that's NATALL.com, if they're interested in our books or in joining the National Alliance or in reading about our organizational work.
Dr. Pierce, thank you very much for being on the program. I am honored that you came on. I hope you enjoyed being here, and I hope you'll come back in the future.
Well, I did enjoy it, and I'd be happy to come back in the future.
Thank you, sir. Good night.
Okay, good night.
All right. Folks, you've been listening to the Hal Turner Show live from New York, New York, USA. I'm here every Tuesday to Friday night, 9 to 11. There is no censorship on this program. There is no topic that is taboo. Callers are not screened in advance for content. I need your support to help keep this program alive beyond this month. I need to raise $1,500 within the next 4 days. Please donate if you can. Use PayPal. It's on the front of my website. And by the way, those of you who are familiar, please stay tuned for the weekly broadcast of the Christian Children of the Light Christian Bible Hour with Jay from Wantagh. And that will be coming up right after this.
At a special event,
whoops.
Do you and your friends want to help eliminate inner? Does the community where you live tend to be getting darker and darker? Are you looking for an evening of entertainment with your friends and family? Is your group looking for a money-making attraction at a special event? Do you and your friends want to help eliminate inner city crime? Well, folks, this is the answer to your prayers. The one and only PNL, Portable Nigger Lecture, complete with two ropes and custom hand-tied nooses. This device has a success rate of 100% and is guaranteed to perform a perfect nigger lynch in every time. The portable nigger lynch can be easily mounted in any standard size pickup truck or permanently mounted at your facility or home. The PNL features quick assembly or disassembly within a matter of minutes. It comes standard with an oversized heavy-duty trap door and spring to support weights up to 16.